Hello everyone, and welcome back to Top Dog with Chicago Dogs manager Butch Hobson. Top Dog is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Chicago manager questions about the dogs, baseball or sports in general, or just seek Butch's wisdom about life events that are going on out there. In this week's episode, Butch provides team updates to us, he discusses team chemistry with us, and what would Butch be doing if he wasn't a baseball player? Let's find out on Top Dog.
Let's welcome back manager Butch Hobson. Butch, do you have any team updates you'd like to provide for us?
Well, we are currently 26 players under contract for spring training. Couple of spots left for a bat that I'm looking for. My son is extended spring with the Giants. They're holding him there in case they get a need in Double A or Triple A. They didn't want to release him because they like him, but, you know, he's a veteran guy, and they just he played well for him last year. So I'm kind of holding a spot just to see what happens, what might happen. Hopefully they'll get him to Richmond or to their AAA club. But things are looking good, man. I'm excited about some of the pitchers we've added, and I think we're going to have an exciting team for the fans in Rosemont and surrounding areas to see.
Well, let's start with fan questions. Sam would like to know, he says, I like the addition of Richard Ruff, but following his career, it seems like he has not gotten the most out of his talent. I would really like to see him make it big, so what do you think that will take?
Pound the strike zone. He's, you know, just a little bit of knowledge that I have on Rich was he just, you know, he had a very live arm. He just, too many walks, and he worked with Billy Horn and Brooks Carey in the Arizona Fall League, and he became a cutter guy and pounded the strike zone down there. He looked very good, and that's why we signed him, you know. Plus, he's a local guy, and, you know, he's 89 and 92 with a cutter, mixes in his curveball a little bit. Cutters guys have success, and hopefully, you know, Rich can trust the fact that he can throw the pitch to contact and not pitch away from it. But that's what he's going to have to do to get to the next level is to you know, control the strike zone.
Brad would like to know from you. He says, there are so many sports teams in and around Chicago. Does it worry you that the dogs will not really catch on because of how much there is to do?
Well, you know, independent ball, as everybody knows, is a little bit cheaper ticket. You know, I think, you know, you're going to have your loyal fans that are going to come see some of these young men that they know from the area, or maybe that, you know, a guy like Sean Dunstan or some other young men that are still young and have a desire to get back to the organization, to have a chance to come see these young men work to do that. I don't, you know, it's all about promotions. It's all about, you know, many, many times, you know, being able to afford to take your family to a game. And I think that's what independent ball allows people to do. I mean, of course, you've got the great organizations in the Cubs and the White Sox and the tremendous fan base that they have. But I still think there's a good, you know, there's still a lot of room for an independent league and a ballpark like the mayor and Sean and Steven have built, you know, to you know, add some entertainment at a lower level to the area. I think we're going to be fine.
Andy would like to know, he says, are you a dynasty guy in baseball where you like it when there is one team that wins three or four World Series titles in a short period of time, or do you like to see new teams winning more frequently?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm glad to see Houston win it last year. I thought that was, you know, good for Houston and good for Astro fans, good for baseball. You're still going to have your dynasties that come around that spend a little bit more money than others do. You know, Sparky Anderson told me back in his last year managing, I was managing Boston, sitting on the third base stands watching BP. He said, Hobson, I'm going to tell you one thing. You're only as good as them horses you put on the field. And money allows you to do that in some sense, but the Astros have a tremendous ball club, and I was glad to see them win it. So, you know, it's good to see, you know, different teams in the playoffs every year. I'd say that, yes.
Derek asks, he says, Butch, I know you were friends with Pete Rose, so I was wondering where you stand on him not being allowed in the Hall of Fame.
He belongs in the Hall of Fame. Nobody will ever do what he did. You know, it's just – nobody will ever get 4,100 plus hits ever. It'll never happen again. So for what he did in baseball, he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Beth would like to know, she says, I love that picture on the website of a bunch of fans in hot dog costumes. Why aren't you in the picture all dressed up?
Because I was not in Chicago at that point in time. If I'd have been there, I'd have been right there with them.
Chuck says, two bench-clearing brawls yesterday. Can anyone blame these hitters for wanting to hit a pitcher when pitchers are throwing a ball 98 miles an hour at them?
Well, unfortunately, there have been bench-clearing brawls in baseball for a good many years now. And, you know, I think, you have a pretty good idea. I mean, hitters don't like to be pitched in, and I understand that. And, you know, certain situations dictate themselves when that's going to happen in retaliation. I didn't see them, so I couldn't really say that that was the reason. I think that there are a lot of things happen when, you know, a hitter thinks he's getting thrown at, and maybe he wasn't because of the ball, you know. I think, you know, it's a little bit different when a ball is at your waist than this when it's at your dome. And those things happen when it wasn't intentional by a fastball just getting away. It happens, especially guys with live arms. But for me to honestly say that's not going to happen again, it will happen again. It's just that I didn't see whether, you know, me watching as a fan that, okay, this team on the field is going to retaliate because one of their guys they thought got hit, or, you know, somebody pimped a home run or whatever. There's all kinds of scenarios that come into play on some of those situations that happen. But guys throw so hard today, it's very dangerous when, you know, when balls are thrown at a hitter's head, and if it is intentionally. But unfortunately, it has been a part of the game that happens. I'm not saying that I'm for it. I mean, I tell my pitchers every year, we're not going to be headhunters. You know, if we have to protect our hitters, that's what we're going to do. And hitters, you need to protect your pitchers. That's how you approach it.
So you understand when players attack the mound when they clearly know that a pitcher just meant to throw it.
Well, I think in some instances, a pitcher, you know, they're going to, you know, whether a pitcher did it intentionally, he's going to say he didn't. But I think there's a lot of times that a pitcher, I mean, we've had instances that happened where I know the fact that my pitcher was not throwing anybody, but the hitter thought he was. And then jawing starts and mouthing starts. And then one guy says something, somebody else says something. And then all of a sudden there's an altercation. And then somebody from the bench comes in and throws a haymaker and starts it. It's just like, I guess unless you're on either one of the teams that you really know the situation, watching from a fan standpoint, really don't know. I mean, you know, fans, you can hear fans, you know, kind of get on a pitcher when one of their home team guys gets a ball thrown close to it. You know, they think, well, he's trying to hit him right there. And in most cases, that's not the case. I just think you have to be involved in one of the teams to know if there's something going on. There's some kind of animosity from the day before or something happened. It's a competitive game that sometimes tempers rise and sometimes they get out of control.
Jim would like to know, he says, a friend of mine was saying to me a few days ago about how much it must be easier to move from being a player to a coach or manager because you don't have the stress of trying to perform. But I wonder if it is more stressful because you don't have a direct impact on the game.
Well, a manager has an impact on the game, by the lineup he puts out there, by the moves that he makes during the game, by if he's bringing the right pitcher in. I mean, it's going to be right or wrong, 50-50. I managed in Boston. It's a tough place to manage. I would have to say that for me, it's more stressful. I mean, I don't want to say that it's stressful. I mean, I still sit in the dugout, and I look out there, and I say, man, I wish I could still do it, you know? You know, I'll throw my jersey out in the middle of the locker room sometimes and say, you know, if we're, you know, guys are like lethargic and going through the motions, and I'll tell my players, you know, guys, here's my shirt. Give me yours. Just give me your shirt for one more time to dive for a ground ball, or one more time to break up a double play, for one more time to come up in that situation with a runner in third and less than two out. So, you know, I would have to say for me it's probably more stressful sitting in a dugout than it is when I'm on the field. Because when I'm on the field, I'm playing a game. I'm a little boy. What kind of stress is that?
Very true. Hannah would like to know, she says, when you were a player, team chemistry didn't seem to be talked about as much. I think those Yankees teams of the 70s even hated each other for the most part. What changed that so that getting along is so much more important now?
Well, I don't. You know what? A lot of that is brought on by the media, and I'm sorry to say that because I have many friends in the media, but I think sometimes they used to say that about the Red Sox when I was there, that everybody went to the airport or went to the ballpark. I mean, why would we go to take a cab to the ballpark when we live there? Everybody takes single cabs to the airport. Because they don't like each other, they don't want to be around each other, which was just not true. I remember that when I was there. I'm going, I never saw that. We all got on a bus and went to the airport, so we wouldn't have to pay cab fare because we didn't make that kind of money back then. It's team chemistry is very, very important, and I think baseball players and managers and coaches look at it one way. What goes on in the clubhouse stays in the clubhouse. And what is perceived by some people as the, they don't seem very friendly to each other. Of course, you see altercations in the dugouts with players. That happens every once in a while. We see a couple of players getting into it. Maybe a player loafed and somebody called him out on it. You see those things. But I think the team chemistry, I think, is very important. And I think it's, I think we had very good team chemistry. When I was with the Red Sox, when I was with the Angels, and I was with the Yankees in 1982, they just a terrible year for the Yankees. We had three managers. We had good team chemistry. We liked each other. So it's unless you're there and you're in the dugout or you're in the clubhouse, you really know whether or not team chemistry is there.
You were talking earlier in the season, and I wonder if kind of fans misconstrue this in some way about as long as players respect each other, you're not really caring one way or the other about whether they think the other guy's a great guy or not.
Whether I think the other guy's what?
A great guy or not. As long as they respect one another, that's really all that matters.
Well, I don't think that I said that. I don't remember saying that. I think that, I want my team and my clubhouse to be a family. And I did say that there's no room for, and I excuse my terminology, a turd in my clubhouse in independent baseball. It's different with an organization. I mean, you have to learn how to deal with that or deal with that person. But as long as you have a good chemistry with the rest of the group, then they will end up taking care of that. But, it's just, I like a family atmosphere. Guys, when guys show up at the ballpark at 12 o'clock every day, they like being at the ballpark. So that means team chemistry is good.
Excellent. Redwood like to know, he says, someone asked you last week about players you like to watch today. Are there players you played against or managed against that you didn't like at all?
No. No, I never felt that way. I think baseball is a family. There are different personalities, and different personalities are going to rub people the wrong way sometimes. But I think when it came down to the nuts and bolts and things, if one of us had a problem, you're going to have the baseball world is going to have your back. That's the way I look at it.
Eric says, forget great players. You got to see some of the greatest managers of all time: Billy Martin, Ralph Houk, Sparky Anderson, Tommy Lasorda, Whitey Herzog, Earl Weaver, guys like that. Who do you think are the best five managers of all time?
Well, Tommy Lasorda is a great manager. Ralph Houk, obviously a great manager. Tony La Russa, one of the best. I thought Don Zimmer was a great manager. I really did. He's a player's guy. Players love playing for him. I had a chance to be around Billy Martin not necessarily during the season. It was spring training, so didn't really get to see a lot of his managerial style, except for spring training. But, I played against him when he was managing, and I saw his managerial style. So, I would say those guys. And then there's a lot of great managers out there. Manager for the Giants.
Bruce Bochy?
Bochy's, I think, is a great manager. I think he gets the most out of his team. When you see guys that hang around that are continuously coming back every year, they're obviously very, very good at what they do.
Ben would like to know, he says, reading about your ejections last season made me laugh. Were you ever a guy that kicked dirt through bases or stuff like that?
All of the above.
I'm surprised. I didn't see you as a base thrower.
Well, you know what? I did throw a base over the left field wall one time. I didn't throw it at somebody. I would never do that. But I did grab a base and throw it over the left field wall, yes.
Taylor would like to know, what do you think about the idea of using computer-generated programs to call balls and strikes during games so the zone is more consistent?
You know what? I think we might be headed that way. I think it, you know, I mean, I can't speak for umpires. I mean, they have a job that I don't want. It's a thankless job, and nobody likes you. And but it may be headed in that direction. I don't, you know, I mean, umpires try to stay within the strike zone, what it is. I know it's changed. Just, you know, anything at the belt or above is not going to strike. It wasn't that way when I played. But I think, you know, determining what the strike zone actually is, I think it might eventually come to that point. Whether or not I agree with it or not, I mean, why would I want to be an umpire if I'm relying? I mean, that's how an umpire, I would think, is going to look at it. If I get some computer telling me whether it's a ball or strike, or maybe somebody say, mate, that takes a lot of pressure off me, you know, and I just keep up with the outs and the count and making a caller or an out call or a save call with that. That gets reviewed anyway. So there's a lot of the replays now. We might be headed in that direction. It might be. I don't know whether I can say, you know, if I had to look at it from an umpire standpoint, I'd say, you know what, you know, I'm a good ball strike guy. I really want to do it myself. And there may be some umpires who say, you know what, okay, that's okay. You know what, I'm going to go out and do my best job. And if they have a computer that helps me learn the strike zone better or whatever they may look at it as, I think we might be headed that way.
Rick would like to know, are there ways to improve hand-eye coordination apart from just getting reps in the batting cage or during batting practice?
Yeah, there's a, you know, I mean, a lot of organizations have a board in their locker rooms. It's a light board, and it, you touch the light as it lights up, you know, in different parts of the big board. You know, we do a lot of pitch recognition drills to help hand-eye coordination. And there's probably a lot out there that I don't know about because the technology is so much greater than it was when I played or managed. But yeah, I think anything you do to help yourself improve your eye-hand coordination, pitch recognition, or be a better hitter to recognize pitches is there are things out there. I just don't know all of them.
Thea would like to know if you're going to be offering camps for kids to come and learn from you.
I think we've scheduled. Well, we haven't scheduled yet. We're talking about doing one camp. We talked about it while I was up there. A date. I want to say it's going to be in, you know, late June, maybe looking late June. I mean, July, early July is usually a vacation time because of the 4th of July. But try to look at the best dates. But there will be for sure one camp offered this year. Yes.
Allie would like to know. She says she's curious from an Alabama alum. What it is that you think that has allowed Nick Saban to continue to be so successful over all this time?
He's a tremendous recruiter. He has a great recruiting staff. Gets the most out of his players. You know, and you know, he's got Alabama to, you know, as an institution that players want to go play. And so once you build that and you keep recruiting and have strong recruiting organization, you're gonna be successful, and that's what he's done.
Jan says, complete this sentence for us. If I wouldn't have been a baseball player, I probably would have been a
football coach.
That would have been the track for you.
Yeah, either that or a farmer.
And still would have been the coolest guy around. And we end with Butch, who says, from one Butch to another, I just wanted to say it is great to have you in Chicago.
Well, Butch, thank you for that very much. I'm really looking forward to it. I love Chicago. I've always loved Chicago. And the Rosemont area, my little time there has been awesome. And I appreciate you saying that. And, you know, I'm really happy. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us this week, Butch.
Okay, buddy. Thank you, man. See you.
Right.
We want to thank Manager Butch Hobson for joining us on Top Dog this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Chicago manager, please send them to us at askbutch@minorleaguesportsreport.com. That's askbutch@minorleaguesportsreport.com. Please have your questions to us by Wednesday evening so we can give the skipper a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Top Dog.